I mean, he plays what? He plays a psychologist, right? Or a psychiatrist, I guess, in this movie?
He plays a ghost.
Spoiler alert! Jesus! Welcome to the Rampant Discourse Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Essen, and I'm joined by my regular discoursers, Travis Hudson and Andrew Riley. We're concluding our series on the best decade of movies ever, the 1990s, with, believe it or not, 1999. We're going to discuss our favorite movie of the year, the most influential, and maybe a couple others that are worthy of discourse. So, Andrew, why don't you kick us off with the highest grossing movies of 1999?
Top of the list is Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, which pulled in a $924 million. Following up on that were The Sixth Sense, Toy Story 2, The Matrix, Tarzan, The Mummy, Notting Hill, The World Is Not Enough, American Beauty, and number 10, Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, at $312 million.
Our senior class contributed to some of that.
Yeah.
All right, so the Academy Award nominees leading up to the winner, Sixth Sense, The Insider? I have no idea what that movie is. The Green Mile, The Cider House Rules, and your winner, American Beauty, a movie about a plastic bag floating in the air. So Andrew, would introduce us to our guessing game.
So we're going to finish off our guessing game by trying to continue to guess movies from each other's lists. So far, Travis is well in the lead with 11. He is uncatchable, so he's going to win this. He knows us better than we know anyone else. Ourselves. But Paul's still got second place with 8, and I'm pulling up the rear with 6 correct guesses. So I can catch Paul, but I cannot catch Travis. So there's still something to play for, Paul.
All right. So I'm going to give my guesses. This is a little tough.
This is a really tough year.
I'm a little worried. This is a deep year. A lot of other years were top heavy. This one's just got a lot of depth in terms of quality movies. Andrew, I'm going to go with Fight Club. Travis, I'm going to go with the Blair Witch Project.
For my guesses, Travis, I'm going to go with Fight Club.
Let's pass it around.
Paul, I'm going to go with Galaxy Quest.
All right. Yeah, it's probably a stronger pick for Paul than my pick. I kind of went outside the box for Paul, so yeah. I said Dogma.
Mm.
And Andrew, we'll see if I can go, 9 for 10 or something on you?
I think it's 9 for 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
I'm going American Beauty.
8 out of 10, I think, would be the if you get this one right. You must have missed another one in there. All right, so American Beauty for me.
All right, Paul, what is your actual favorite movie?
My actual favorite movie? By Grabthar's Hammer.
Yes!
It's Galaxy Quest. Which is a tough one.
Oh, it's tough. It's so tough.
It was tough to leave off The Matrix, to be quite honest. That was definitely high on the list. But the underdog Galaxy Quest just takes it. It's as someone who's a Star Trek fan, I get so many of the little jokes and inside references there. It's got a pretty stellar cast all around. It's smartly written. It's funny, touching, exciting. It's got some pretty impressive graphics that still hold up. And it's a movie that I can watch over and over again and still chuckle at the jokes, which is important.
Yeah, it is a comedy movie that has aged just fine. Mm-hmm. And in some ways is even better now than it was first released. And mm-hmm. it's really impressive because it is just a robust movie.
Also dovetails well with another great movie in the same month, even, Toy Story 2.
How's that dovetail?
Because Tim Allen
as Buzz.
Oh, sure, okay.
Lightyear.
Yeah, I see where you're going.
Not the same character, but like,
yeah.
But it is like a strong month for Tim Allen.
Sure. Yeah. That he's got to be feeling pretty good about that. My best movie for 1999 was Office Space.
Wow.
So Office Space is another comedy. Judge comedy here with just remarkably strong office-based humor. It's the life that we don't want to live, being in the cubicles, and the escape that we can have from it if we just stop caring. There's a lot here, and it also is a movie that holds up remarkably well and is quite quotable. It it's hard to find comedies that fill this role, and Office Space does it better than any other movies on my list, with the possible exception of Dumb and Dumber. Those are really the only two comedies I ended up pulling out.
That was on my Worthy of Further Discourse list. One thing that's always kind of confused, or not confused me, but one thing that I struggle with Office Space is I have a hard time figuring out what the moral of this movie is.
Sure.
Because it seems to be, to your point, it seems to be like, you can live a better life if you just stop caring. And it kind of works out for a little bit, but ultimately, it kind of doesn't. I mean, it's a happy ending. He seems happier doing his manual labor job than he was in the office, but it seems like a weird message that really shouldn't work for anybody. Mm-hmm. And I think most people would agree, like, hey, would you rather have a high-paying office job or would you rather have a low-paying construction manual labor job? I think most people would say, like, no, I'd rather have the higher-paying job with benefits in the office. So, I don't know. I know I'm super overanalyzing a comedy movie here.
But the thing is, it's worthy of that kind of analysis.
Yeah.
It's deeper than just a comedy movie.
Yeah, it is one of the smarter comedies.
I think it comes down to what makes you happy. Being in the office job did not make him happy.
Yeah.
So he could have the money, but it didn't do him any good. What made him happy was his girlfriend and Kung Fu, but then he ruins that because it just wasn't quite enough. It wasn't working for his friends, and he's trying to do something good and ends up hurting everything. And then he finds the resolution and getting back to something simple. So if he can get back to the manual labor and make up with his girlfriend and get the Kung Fu and do the manual labor, it'll all work out just fine for him.
And his friends end up keeping their office jobs at a different company, if I recall correctly. So it's clearly more of a personal thing than just a one-size-fits-all.
Yeah, the movie is definitely about his journey.
Yeah.
All right. So that's actually my favorite movie, is Office Space.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's eminently quotable. But I'm also trying to look up to see if I'm actually getting the meaning behind it right. So you guys were using the phrase, like, stop caring. And
it's not really stop caring.
It's not
right.
It's like a Zen movie almost. Like
it is Zen. Yeah.
Like, he's not stopped caring. He stopped worrying about other people's expectations and what he should be doing and everything. And like you said, most people are going to pick the high paying office job versus the other low paying job. But it's like you don't think about all the stuff that goes into, first of all, getting all those benefits and everything. Like, what do you truly, and like, he's clearly enjoys himself more carrying his lunch in a pail and rolling up his sleeves, doing manual labor, like his next door neighbor friend was doing the entire time, whose only goal in life was two chicks at the same time. Like, it's a very, like, retrospectively now I realize that it's like very, Zen-like movie where, he's basically in that trance almost the whole time. But yeah, I mean, and there's even a Zen quote, but before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. And that's like when you said about the manual labor job, that's kind of thinking about that type of thing. I have no idea if that's what Mike Judge was really going for or not. But yeah, I can watch this movie all day long.
All right, so influential. This is maybe a little controversial, and I'm not sure in a year that's such a deep year for movies, if I'm happy with this, but I went with The Sixth Sense because it kickstarted M. Night Shyamalan's career, which has had quite a bit of longevity considering the ups and downs of his career. And really, I think also kickstarted, and didn't create, but like also kickstarted the idea of a twist at the end of a movie and trying to be aware of, like, okay, is there a twist? What's the twist going to be? If it's an M. Night Shyamalan movie, you know there's going to be a twist. But, you know, some other movies also tried to do that. It also was one of the few roles where Bruce Willis isn't playing John McClane in space.
I was going to point out, this caps Bruce Willis's 90s, which apparently he's a fan of numbers because he's in 12 Monkeys, yeah. Die Hard 2, Pulp Fiction, Sixth Sense, Fifth Element, and then Armageddon. But yeah, you're right. This is one of those, is not like the other. Well, Pulp Fiction's kind of different too. But
yeah, he plays a psychologist, right? Or a psychiatrist, I guess, in this movie.
He plays a ghost.
Spoiler alert.
He's played a ghost of a psychiatrist.
Yeah, he's a psychiatrist for the little boy, right?
Which, you know, is such a completely odd role for Bruce Willis to play. You know, it also kickstarts Haley Joel Osment as the child star
to replace Macaulay Culkin.
To replace Macaulay Culkin, who had gotten too old at that point. And, you know, Haley Joel Osment was, again, the, if you needed a precocious youngster, he was the child star for the next couple of years.
Was he Annie? Anakin?
Oh, no.
No.
Who was Anakin?
Someone else completely.
Yeah, Jake Lloyd.
They were thinking, well, there was a lot of people saying you should have gotten him, but... Yeah. No, really the only other movie he had until much later, the only role that was significant was AI, artificial intelligence, which didn't quite make my list of worthy to mention because it's just we're trying to keep it tight. But that was a movie I really enjoyed as well.
Yeah, so that was my pick for most influential.
My most influential movie is The Matrix.
Yeah, somebody had to say it.
Yeah, it hurt me to leave it off.
These are tough picks here, so I'm glad that, you know, we're not duplicating too much because it would be bad to duplicate for this year. But The Matrix is clearly an influential movie. It brings Gnosticism into movies. It brings the cyberpunk into movies. It brings a whole row of technical thrillers. It brings the spinning camera effect into the movies. And it has, of course, its own sequels. But it is, without a doubt, one of the most influential movies of the decade, if not of all time.
Right. Yeah, it brought philosophy. It brought the red pill, blue pill.
It has, and the sequels continue on with that philosophy, not nearly as successfully, but the first one definitely just hitting on all the
cylinders. And in a weird, kind of convoluted way, it's a little bit, what Morpheus is saying is almost the same conceit as what Office Space is trying to say. Like, do you want to continue your boring life in your cubicle, or do you want to take the other pill and go down the other way?
Do you want enlightenment that comes at a cost?
Right. Yeah. I want to defend my pick a little bit, only in the sense that, and I seriously gave Matrix a lot of consideration, but I wondered how ultimately influential it was, because Bullet Time was all the rage for about maybe, 2 years or something afterwards, and you don't really see it all that much anymore.
I think it's one of those that's in the stable of effects that an architect, a visual effects person can use, but they're not going to use it all the time, because you don't want to use it. It becomes overused.
It stopped being in movies, but like stayed in like commercials and stuff for a long time. It did become kind of like a cheesy thing of like you knew what they were ripping off the Matrix. Basically.
Yeah, it felt like it was used kind of as a cheeky reference to the Matrix more often than it was used in like homage. I just don't see a lot of other movies that seem to pick up on the same like dystopian future cyberpunk.
We haven't had some for a while, but we're going to get Matrix 4 here shortly, so who knows?
You can't influence yourself, though, really.
Yeah.
Right, I agree, but maybe Matrix 4 continues the influence factor. We're like, oh, hey, it still worked. Let's try it with something else.
Yeah, and so that's really the only reason why. It's just because I felt like, considering how big of a movie it was, and it felt more influential than it actually was to me.
I don't necessarily disagree. It probably is less influential than it's being made out to be.
I still think the philosophy, though, well, and another one of the philosophical points is I had never heard of the thought that we're living in a computer simulation before this movie, and then it became like a legit thing that scientists are contemplating. Like, are we living in a computer simulation?
Yeah, Elon Musk likes to talk about it a lot.
Yeah, or I think maybe Neil deGrasse Tyson has talked about it, or maybe he disliked it.
It's pretty mainstream philosophical thought, because it's one of those things where if you assume that computers can get to that level, then the odds that we are actually living in a simulation approach infinity. You know, it's as soon as it's possible that we do it, we ourselves are in it, which is a crazy thought.
Right. But maybe it was around before The Matrix, but that was, even if it was, that was the mass audience's introduction to that notion.
It definitely did exist before, but the philosophical notions, the Gnosticism, like I said, it really found a home in the culture of the time, and Gnosticism especially continues to have a resurgence in our culture right now.
So my influential was back and forth, so since Andrew already said The Matrix, that takes one of my choices off the table, so I'm going with Phantom Menace.
Okay.
Which, on one hand, it's kind of like, how can it really be the most influential? Like, it was already Star Wars, people knew it, but like, reading and listening to some stuff about it, like, it, I don't know if it created it necessarily, but it exploded how you could use IP and market your stuff. I mean, the original Star Wars movies, we had figures and everything else, but
merchandising.
Yeah, like, this took merchandising to another level, and like, we forget with something like The Matrix or even T2 or something like that, but the special effects and like what you how little actors were needed for this movie, it has become like the standard now. Like, this is like you could. This is where the special effects and wizardry and everything kind of leading to the MCU, and like how much computer graphics there are relative to actual sets and people and everything in something like Endgame are, and like just it's the origin of a villain is still, although this is kind of speaking against influential, like it's still kind of a unique way of going back. But the concept of prequels, I don't know, really had to be around before this movie, but you have so many prequels nowadays, it's become like second nature to, oh, we're finished with Game of Thrones, let's go back and tell you how we got to the beginning of it, or you liked Breaking Bad, well, let's rewind that and go back to before that, or so it's become like standard. Or even Captain Marvel was technically a prequel to the MCU.
Did you give any thought to the Blair Witch Project as influential? And I only ask because of this. So, I feel like the found footage concept was practically non-existent before then. Or at least that really made it blow up. And I feel like that has stuck with us. And it hasn't been overused in the sense that we still see it constantly in a lot of movies to this date.
That was when I was trying to be like, what can I pick besides The Matrix, basically?
Yeah.
I was like, Blair Witch definitely did, yes, cross my mind. So give yourself half a point if you're trying to catch up.
I'm not trying to. I'm curious because I wanted to explain, I guess, my guess for you. It wasn't necessarily a favorite necessarily of yours, but
it was truly like a unique, just kind of like how Scream changed horror. Like, yeah, this changed horror. You wouldn't have something like Paranormal Activity.
Mm-hmm.
I probably without having the Blair Witch Project.
And to your point about the marketing too, like they had a pretty revolutionary marketing with that, where they tried to make it seem like it was real found footage and everything. Like, oh, this actually happened. These people were lost in the woods or whatever it was. And like, a lot of people fell for that.
It was legit scary in the theater when you were seeing it with people until you got to the end. And then like, I'm the only one sitting there like, that was fantastic. And everybody else around me is like,
what the
fuck was that? Like, somebody literally shouted that in the theater after my showing of it. Like,
yeah. I was probably thinking the same as that guy.
But, like, kind of influential, but anytime nowadays, I don't know how it comes up as often, but anytime, like, somebody's kind of, like, something seems to be standing in a corner or something like that, my wife and I will be like, why are you doing the Blair Witch? Because, I that scene is just so burned into our brains.
It is fairly iconic, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More so than anything, even, like, the tents and the slobbering into the camera and all that. It's like, that scene of that him in the corner in the house, and like kind of the mystery of like, what the hell really did happen?
Yeah. What the hell did I just watch? Yeah. Now we're on Worthy of Discourse. Is that what we're on?
So I just wanted to throw out there before we get on other tangents. I went through a lot of actors, so to give at least one actress her due that I think really bookends the decade. I mentioned her all the way back in 1990, Pretty Woman. With Richard Gere, 1999, Runaway Bride, with Richard Gere again, which just kind of it was like one of those things.
You know, Richard Gere is an actor.
Yeah, but I'm highlighting Julia Roberts because she's like, when you look at the list of, like, if you go on like IMDb and look for a list of actresses or something that went, like, yeah, I would have to probably say she's the top one. I mean, and she's in Flatliners. I mean, she did have a fairly strong run.
So you're saying that Runaway Bride is a sequel?
No, I'm not even saying it's a sequel. I'm just saying like it's an odd bookend.
It is
a bookend. The same pairing was done in two different movies.
Yeah, and like, about Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, right?
They didn't bookend it though, but yeah, they had Sleepless in Seattle and You Got Mail, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, Meg Ryan's actually another one of my strong contenders for a 90s actress.
City of Angels.
And Helen Hunt, very strong too.
So, you mentioned Can't Hardly Wait last year for just a number of people it introduced. Mm-hmm. I was struck by, and then this is going to be kind of cheating because I'm about to list like a half dozen movies, but I was struck by just the sheer number of movies that kickstarted, for lack of a better term, like the hot young starlet kind of thing in terms of actresses.
10 Things I Hate About You.
You've got Varsity Blues with Ali Lauder and her whipped cream bikini.
Oh, so not to derail you already. My wife's best friend went to high school with Ellie Larder.
Oh, nice.
I doubt she'd come and give us a whipped cream to the show, though.
I wasn't necessarily asking. But wait, your friend or the Ellie Larder?
Ellie Larder.
Okay.
Or her friend.
She's All That, Rachel Leigh Cook.
Mm-hmm.
Idle Hands, Jessica Alba.
Jessica Alba.
Cruel Intentions, Sarah Michelle Gellar. And American Pie, Tara Reid. And there's others for these, too. Cruel Intentions, it had Selma Blair and Reese Witherspoon. And American Pie had like Allison Hannigan. But that was a lot of...
And to your previous point, maybe Austin Powers and Heather Graham. But you're on Elizabeth Hurley's side.
Yeah, she's not. Doesn't measure up. But it was striking to me how many young starlets had their careers launched in movies this
And did year. You actually say 10 Things I Hate About You?
I didn't.
Julia Stiles.
Was that 99? I can't remember.
Pretty sure that was one of her.
That was one of her first. Okay.
It may not be the first, but okay. It was pretty close to her in, pretty sure, Heath Ledger's first movies as well.
Probably.
Yeah, and she and Heath Ledger are really good in it, so.
Which helps when you are based on something as strong as Shakespeare.
It really does.
Yeah.
It's amazing how few people know that, though. No one knows it now, because no one sees it now. But at the time, people saw it like, oh, I liked it. And then...
Then you say, it's Taming of the Shrew, if you're an English nerd. And you're like, what?
any others?
We hinted at it a whole lot last year, and then you just brought up their name. But yeah, American Pie.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go 1999 without American Pie. Fight Club almost made my list, which... Andrew guessed for me, yeah.
Yeah. Like, impressive that it didn't make your list, in my opinion. It's again a very strong movie, and I know one that I think one that you really like.
Yeah, it arguably could have made maybe more influential, but I don't know, to me, influential had to be Matrix or Phantom Menace.
No, I don't disagree with how you line things up. Yeah. It just goes to show how deep the year it was, because Fight Club is a remarkable movie for a lot of reasons. It introduces, sure, it has that twist that you were talking about, but it also just introduces a lot of ideas that movies play around with still.
Or, like, I don't listen to them as often, but the Minimalists cite the Fight Club so much about, like, the whole thing where they're going through cataloging everything, where he got everything in his house, but then also saying, like, you're not the pants you wear, or
you're
something.
Nothing,
like
you're not what you purchase.
And you're not, that type of conceit was from this, and minimalism was latched onto that pretty hard. Just recently, with kids now, and I think I mentioned it before, though, but the best one, Toy Story 2, is the best Toy Story movie. But I've watched that. Oh, we've watched it so many times.
You want a good movie to watch with your kids? Try Iron Giant.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of laughing on the inside because I've been waiting to mention my next worthy of discourse, South Park, Bigger, Longer.
Okay. Not something.
And every time you're
kids.
Like, I really want like enjoy watching this. I really enjoy watching this to my kids. I'm like, nope, not gonna bring up this one.
Well, that's okay. My next two are definitely not kid related either.
Okay, go.
Dogma.
Yeah. That was a tough one to leave off. I really I know one of you picked. I think you picked Dogma for me, Andrew.
No,
or I Travis did. Yeah, it was on the short list, but it was a deep year.
Alan Rickman.
Yeah,
a lot of good names in that. And, you know, interesting couple of ideas. Obviously, you know, huge problems as well, but very fun movie.
And there were enough like slow moments where it's just like, okay, yeah, this doesn't age well, or it's just, you know, this could have been cut out, or it's not the perfect movie as we've been mentioning. There's enough negatives that
kind of. And I haven't seen his most recent movies recently. Haha. It also seems like Kevin Smith's grandest vision, maybe?
Dogma?
Yeah. Like, the most epic. Probably definitely his most epic.
It's hard to top, you know, having God arrive just in the nick of time to save the universe from...
But, like, even just tackling...
Elimination.
The ideas that he was tackling about...
Those are big ideas.
Faith and religion and all that stuff. Like, it's more so than Clerks worrying about Clerk 37. Not supposed to be here today.
But Clerks has the same kind of ideas of the big idea of... What am I supposed to do with my life?
Right. Clerks falls more in line with, like we're saying, Office Space.
Yeah.
It's more in that vein of, you know, contemplating the drudgery of everyday life, which is what The Matrix also starts off with.
So we're saying all movies are about the drudgery of everyday life.
Or the escape from it. The movies are our escape from it, which is one of the reasons why I like movies that are about making movies.
And Fight Club is about it. Like, that's,
I haven't seen Fight Club.
What?
I know.
Okay. We're all learning.
And again, I know the twist is like he's in the building or something like that.
We're going to leave that one alone then.
Yeah. Just go watch it.
So one more for you guys. Here's another Bruce Willis movie. Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Oh, he was in it?
I've not seen it.
Have you seen it?
Yeah. It's been a long time.
But yeah, he's the bartender.
Okay. Was Jason Statham in that one or no?
No, I don't think so. So
this is not the one. And which is the one where Brad Pitt speaks so you can't understand
him? That's Snatch.
Snatch, okay.
Very fun movie, though.
Who won the guessing game?
Oh, Travis, by a long shot.
Who got second?
I did not catch you because Travis did not put Fight Club on his list.
Yeah.
So I'm in third place.
Second place. I'll take it.
So the final scores were 11 because Travis managed to not get any this round. First round in a while for that. And then you with 8 and me with 7. So really close, ultimately, in the end.
Ultimately, Travis got a little...
Especially since I gave you guys so many freebies.
Yeah. Travis got a little over half. We both got a little under half. Mostly yours, I'm guessing. So do we want to have a quick conversation with the actor of the decade, or we just wrap this up? I haven't seen anything to convince me that it's not Arnold Schwarzenegger.
So I can just retoss out the ones I had raised. I'm not saying any of them are my choice, possibly, but there's Morgan Freeman, Tom Cruise, Tom Hanks, to a lesser extent, maybe Adam Sandler. Jim Carrey had at least one very strong year. Harrison Ford and Bruce Willis.
Ah, crap. Maybe it was Jason Statham.
To be fair, let's give the ladies some love, too. Like, Julia Roberts, Susan Sarandon, Meryl Streep, Jodie Foster, Michelle Pfeiffer, Winona Ryder, Sharon Stone, Meg Ryan, all had pretty strong decades, a pretty strong decade as well.
Yeah, I made a misstatement. It wasn't Bruce Willis.
Your premise was wrong. All right.
My premise was wrong, but it was a good movie.
All right, so name. I don't know if you already had it pulled up. Name me off Arnold's movies.
So here's Arnold's movies from 1990 on. Total Recall, Kindergarten Cop, Terminator 2, Judgment Day, Dave, which is surprising to me. Apparently he was in Dave.
What?
Playing himself.
Okay.
So, Last Action Hero, Beretta's Island, again playing himself. True Lies, Junior, Eraser, Jingle All the Way, Batman and Robin, okay, I hear you. And then End of Days.
I got one more for you.
Barely Missing the Sixth Day. It was in 2000.
He was also mentioned as president, another good president, in Demolition Man.
So there you go. Also in Demolition
Man. So I guess
that's a pretty strong first half.
Definitely stronger than the second half.
Though. Yeah, but the second half still has Eraser, Jingle All the Way, End of Days, solid movies that probably were a top 10 grossing.
You know, and considering T2 was one of my personal favorite movies, Kindergarten Cop was another personal favorite movie. The runner up then would be Morgan Freeman, which is appropriate because we said he's kind of the runner up in all of the movies that he's been in.
That's my only strike against him, really, is that he's really not the leading character in almost any of the movies that we mentioned.
I think we established he's basically never the leading character.
Yeah.
Although, I've never seen Amistad, and I don't really remember Kiss the Girls. But.
I think isn't... what's her name? Yeah, the lead character in Kiss the Girls.
Is that Angelina Jolie? I can't remember. That was the Long Game of Spiders.
Why am I blanking on her name? Ashley Judd?
Maybe.
Anyway.
I'm looking through my list of best and influential to see if I can see trends in the actors and just the ones that I picked out from there. And so far, Gene Hackman's winning, so that's not a good sign.
I was going to say, you didn't pick American Beauty. Otherwise, I was going to say, might be, unfortunately, Kevin Spacey. But
Sylvester Stallone is also showing up a lot. Kevin Spacey is, I left off K-Pax from my list. That was a movie in the 90s that I loved. So, yeah, a ton of movies that we haven't talked about.
Wait, did you like American Beauty?
Like American Beauty very much, but I had to cut it out because we're trying to... So
cut it out. But
what else was Sylvester Stallone in besides Demolition Man and Oscar. Cupid or whatever? Oscar.
Right, so that's two. Right, so Gene Hackman and Sylvester Stallone each have two on my list right now.
That's not very impressive.
Brad Pitt has two.
Brad Pitt's pretty strong, too. 12 Monkeys, Fight Club, etc.
And so
Jack Nicholson? Jack Nicholson.
The famous acting golfer?
The famous acting golfer.
Jack Nicholson?
Jack Nicholson has at least two.
As Good as It Gets and Mars Attacks. Yeah.
And I think something
But again,
else.
We're all talking about two movies.
Yeah, I get
Arnold
it.
Schwarzenegger had like six. No. Really and, solid
but
movies.
On my list. I don't have too many Arnold Schwarzenegger movies.
Your list is wrong.
You could probably end with T2 and Kindergarten Cop, and yeah. Yeah. You've convinced me.
All right. I won the guessing game.
No, definitely not. But I'm still not convinced on the whole actor thing. I think that the actor of the 90s is probably Bruce Willis.
Hmm.
Well, you could run through his other than not Lock, Stock.
Well, and I don't know if I wrote down all his movies or just the ones I recognized also. It was 12 Monkeys, Die Hard 2, Pulp Fiction, Sixth Sense, Fifth Element, and Armageddon.
Yeah, I like that list better.
There's undoubtedly ones missing in there. But,
that's a shorter list, though.
Quality over quantity.
Mm.
He's no Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks was a busy man.
All right, so here you want. He's actually, God, he was in a ton of movies. There's like 30 movies here. Okay, yeah, Die Hard 2, Look Who's Talking To, The Bonfire of the Vanities, Mortal Thoughts, Hudson Hawk, Billy Bathgate, The Last Boy Scout, The Player, Death Becomes Her, Loaded Weapon 1, Striking Distance, Color of Night, North, Pulp Fiction, Nobody's Fool, Die Hard with a Vengeance, Four Rooms, 12 Monkeys, Last Man Standing, Beavis and Butthead Do America, The Fifth Element, The Jackal, Mercury Rising, Armageddon,
Jackal, right.
Frankie Goes to Hollywood, The Siege, Breakfast of the Champions, Siege. The Sixth Sense, The Story of Us.
Yeah, like I said, probably because I saw how many movies, I didn't want to write them all down. I just wrote my personal highlights down.
Sure.
Just by sheer massive volume. Unlike what you were saying, by quality, not. By quantity, he might win.
He does a lot of movies. It's like Michael Caine. How many movies has Michael Caine been in? Tons.
I'm not going to look that up.
No, it's a lot. It's okay. So many.
All right, so we're agreed. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
You're going to just keep me here until I say yes, right?
I can edit this, so I'll just spice out a yes from earlier and be like, Arnold Schwarzenegger, yes.
I do need to get home, so I'll just go say yes. Arnold Schwarzenegger had a good decade. I like a lot of his films. I like Last Action Hero. I like True Lies. Terminator 2 is not one of my favorites, but it's not his fault. He plays the role very, very well. Yeah, he has a good year.
It's not his fault that you have bad taste in like the first movie better.
I probably have to say, as much as I love Morgan Freeman, though, re-looking at some of the list and the cultural importance, Tom Hanks is probably runner-up. When you have League of Their Own, a quintessential rom-com in Sleepless in Seattle, Philadelphia, one of your influential movies, Forrest Gump, Apollo 13, two Toy Stories, Saving Private Ryan.
And if you actually look at his list, I'm sure it's much longer than this as well. He's a very busy actor.
He was in whatever this Bonfire of the Vanities movie was, too, which apparently was a...
important movie.
Important movie that I've never seen.
Not really in your wheelhouses.
All right, well, this seems like a good place to wrap up. Thank you guys for just coming over
best
all these consecutive
ever.
Days to discuss the best decade of movies ever. And we'll talk again later. Can't stop the discourse.